Hi, and welcome to the DIN Identity Podcast. Today, we will visit Sweden and talk to the company iGrant. Lal, the CTO, will share his thoughts about the current identity space we are in. Good. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good.
Great. Glad you're here and looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me over. It's great to talk about these kind of things with people who have been in the field.
Absolutely. Well, let's get down to business. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and the company you're working for and how you got there?
My history, long history working in the telecom space, unlike a typical telecom engineer, I have a slightly different career path. I've only worked with new products pretty much my entire life and career, starting with network management systems, 3G, 4G, 5G, and then with the data warehousing, data mining, security, and then cloud, distributed cloud. So got introduced to distributed cloud. And over the course of these years, I've also been traveling between Finland and Sweden and got to a realization that even though these countries are very close to each other, it was almost impossible to carry your data or even to carry out transactions across the border.
Yeah.
And I was sharing this kind of thought process with my co-founder 5 years ago. And we were saying how cool it would be if I could actually really, because I was filing returns in two countries, et cetera. And I was saying how cool it would be if there was a mechanism of, really just upload your documents or upload your data. And then they know that it's valid and so on, And I'm able to actually use just one app. I don't have to use one app in Finland, one app in Sweden, yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. So I was sharing that kind of thing. And then she got interested, and here we are. 5 years from now, we have iGrant Detail as a platform.
That's really cool. So it's a really nice journey of how you started, though. Comes from a very personal perspective, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, it's even more interesting because it was I was literally in that situation where I had to move my daughter's health data from Finland to Sweden, and I couldn't do it in a digital way at all.
Wow.
Because of the regulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, I was even angry about myself and angry about everything, despite being in the right side of the world when it comes to digitalization, still you could not get anything downloaded as a software copy or anything like that because of law that prevented this from happening. And I was really how can that be the case?
Yeah, that's crazy. If you're gonna go on to one of the first questions, what's your point of view of digital identity today? We are in a space where the Nordics have bank ID, but you have struggled to be able to move data between two countries. Mm-hmm. What's your kind of main point of view of digital identity today?
I think the if you take a step back and really look at it from a digitalization point of view, as I mentioned in the beginning, we are supposedly digitally very advanced, but then from a digital identity point of view, it's still pretty old-fashioned, if I may put it that way.
Yeah.
So to me, a advanced digital identification mechanism is fundamental to really enable digitalization to the full potential, and to unlock, for example, the access to banking and all these services, via a similar kind of mechanisms. And you don't want to have multiple apps and multiple keys and multiple things, etc. At the same time, you don't want to have a single point of failure either. So how do you enable that kind of a mechanism? And for that, that is what I would call as an advanced digital identity system.
Yeah. So what I have to give all honors to Bank ID. It's working really well, right?
Absolutely.
And now they're able to, you use your fingerprint to just quickly get a notification and scan and be like, oh, you logged in. And then it's kind of working. Yep. But what do you feel First of all, do you believe they will be able to jump on this third generation identity that's coming with EU, or will they kind of fall behind or be a starting point of trust? Where would you kind of put BankID in that
direction? I think if you look at BankID, they've done extremely impressive work. I mean, they started sometime in 2003, and they've come a very, very long way when it comes to really making it easy for citizens and every person who's actually consuming a digital service.
Yeah.
So they have really done a fantastic job from where they started off. I'll put it that way. And what is really perhaps missing is the interoperability and being able to actually use the same kind of mechanism in a global perspective, or in a across even beyond Sweden perspective. That's something like the missing part. But then again, if you really look at it from the rest of the world perspective, nobody was there either. In a way, there's no system out there where, at least today, there's no system out there where people could pretty much be seamlessly be in the same system across Europe or across the world. So I'm rather confident that BankID recognizes this. The fact that they are already part of our EU wallet consortium, etc., tells me that they really is looking to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily feel they are very very behind if they want to really do it.
No, because they have the skills to manage a lot of security, right? So it's just
absolutely. And look at the kind of transaction volume. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
And it's very sensitive data or critical data that they've actually the kind of challenge they've solved way back in the middle of 2000s. The early 2000s is like unbelievable. So the kind of maturity and the operational ability they've gained over the period of time is fundamental, I would say, for Swedish society, if not the whole European society, to leverage on.
Absolutely. So you mentioned interoperability. I just want to touch upon that. Yes, there's no system that kind of interoperates. EU had an attempt before. It didn't really work. But we have passports, right? And passports have an electronic chip in it, meaning that there has to exist an agreed upon electronic data model somewhere.
Yep.
Why is this not being spoken that much about in the space we are in?
I mean, if you really look at the passport system, it's unbelievable, right? At least all across Europe, it's a common format. It's a common. Pretty much every passport supports NFC, and you can actually verify the authenticity of a passport in a single tap, and that is not really people are not really well aware of that whole fact. So today, for example, if I carry my passport and if somebody want to actually verify the authenticity of it or to check my credentials, they can do that already today.
Yeah.
But the one fundamental problem is like the scalability of such a solution and the cost associated with implementing that kind of solution in every system. For example, if you're talking about a country border systems, it's not a big deal. They can manage. But if you want to really make it as a system of entry point for anybody in the physical and digital world, the system is absolutely not scalable. No. That's where the issue is, and it's very expensive.
Yeah. So what makes it not scalable? Is it the sense that it's physical, or
I think it's down to having to verify it, having to integrate the APIs and so on.
Yeah.
And that makes it extremely cumbersome. So for example, if you really want to do a good job, they need to have some kind of an access to the certificate authority in Sweden. If they want to verify a Swedish passport and so on, which is okay if you're talking about a travel only scenario where they are checking it at the border, then it's okay. But if you really want to have like let's say can I log in with my passport kind of system? That's not possible today from a scalability point of view and from a cost point of view.
No,
Or it's, I would say, I wouldn't say not possible. I would say it's extremely cumbersome.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. But I got this question before. Like, why can't we just take the passport data and make it into verifiable credential? And everything would be great.
Oh, we have done that, by the way.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So how did that go?
Well, that's pretty, I mean, you can try it out yourself. So we have already demonstrated where you can, if you have a passport that is supporting NFC, you can, with our data wallet that you can download from Play Store, App Store, you can copy all the content, scan and copy the content, your picture and the signature, et cetera, onto it. And while we actually copy over, we are validating it. And then once you store it as a credential, you are part of a ledger network from that point onwards. And then from that point onwards, the entire verification happens from the wallet towards any verifiers who want to do it. So everybody who supports the SSI stack, for example, can configure for these attributes, and they can pretty much, like, for example, if they want to do age verification or a document signing where they want to use an actual signature from a passport, they can do that already today.
Yeah, that's cool. So that brings me up to a point that you brought up, that you want to focus on use cases and value rather than tech, basically. How has this use case created value in your guys' ecosystem?
Yeah, so I think you know, if you really look at the last 5 or 6 years, there have been like a lot of activities in the tech space when it comes to the system development, tech development, standardization, etc. With all the SSI, verifiable credentials, etc. There have been quite a bit of work that has been done. What I believe is fundamentally the issue is the governance of the whole thing. You know, if you are really talking, adopting this kind of system to a particular use case, how do you govern such an infrastructure? How can we make this trustworthy end to end? That is one aspect. Second aspect is what kind of credentials are really required? How can we really make these things seamlessly interoperable? So to me, if you want to really address these kind of issues, what is really needed is to lay out clear use cases and someone really making a choice that, okay, we're going to go ahead and do this, you know. Let me give you an example. So in Sweden, I don't know how it is in Norway, if you go to Systembolaget, which is like the state alcohol sales seller. So if you go there, they are today asking for your ID card when they sell you alcohol, basically, right?
Yeah.
So what's happening is really that people are actually exposing all their data. And the same goes for example, if you're going to a pub or something like that, or a nightclub, for example. So these kind of use cases could easily be done with a digital credentials without even really exchanging any data.
Yeah.
Just by, you know, having a zero knowledge proof kind of system, where none of these companies really need to have any access to any data. They can, at the same time, they can have a validity check on they can verify that you're of certain age and so on without having to consume the actual data itself. So those kind of systems are already there. So the challenge is there's no clear incentives or willingness to really go ahead and implement this kind of system in real life, in a way. So that's why I've been quite often educating the need to adopt or jump into certain use cases. Because once you jump into these use cases, you know, you also understand the operational challenges of really scaling it up, and you learn. So if you look at most of the Silicon Valley companies or internet companies, they all build their systems by actually doing it, and they were actually realizing the scalability issues themselves, and they began to actually adopt and adapt new things all the time.
Yeah.
And if that has to happen, we need to actually start implementing use cases.
Absolutely. Well, I completely agree with you. Because the tech doesn't tell a well enough story, because it's easy to make tech look nice, but when it's first in the hands of the world, it's going to be different. But you guys are able to consume passport data. Have you been able to put that into a use case yet, or have you tested out with people? Or
Yeah, unfortunately, we have delimited that whole thing only to say onboarding situations.
Yeah.
and for age verifications. Because of the nature of our business, and because we are positioning ourselves as a what we call as a data intermediation service, so we don't want to really provide an end service. So unless and until there's an application that really wants to say check your age or check your data from a passport verification point of view. Like it's not really out there yet. We did of course do trials. You can, as I said, you can already check some of the trials that we have done for applications where, for example, there's an application in Sweden which checks the verifying the person. If you're like a plumber or some kind of a daily worker, for example.
Yeah.
There's certain kind of application that where people can actually demand service, on-demand service requests, etc. For those kind of systems, this is extremely valuable. So they can guarantee that, okay, the person actually is legal, having a work permit, etc. And unfortunately, they haven't gone live yet with that system.
No.
But we do have it, yes.
That's cool. That's cool to hear. I was just thinking, like, randomly ideating now, saying that, hey, if the bank terminals wanted to support this, it would be the perfect kind of exchange point. When you tap it, you tap to pay, but you also tap to validate your ID, right?
Absolutely.
And it's that wallet just says, or the terminal says, well, you're not allowed to buy alcohol because
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you basically, when you enter into a alcohol shop, you could pretty much be tapping your ID card or your digital ID, your phone, for example, with the NFC, and you could be entering, and then when you're checking out, you just pay and check out in one single transaction. So that's already possible today. It's more about the business case and the willingness for people to actually really look into these kind of use cases.
And then the thing is, like, how do you make a store go, like, towards this? It's really tricky.
Yeah.
We have the story about Digital Bazaar. They have done this huge, you know about this, right? They have done this huge store age verification project.
Yeah.
Do you know what the business model behind, or like the business mindset behind there? Like, what was the driver for that possible change?
Tell me about it.
So I was hoping you knew, but I'm going to tell you about this, case, sure. And we can discuss about it. But Digital Bazaar has been able to talk to this convenience store organization, which has about 180,000 convenience stores across the U.S.
Yeah.
And they went in with the SSI mindset and say, hey, we can do age verification a lot smoother and faster for you guys. And this has been tested and proven and trialed and been kind of talked about a lot. But I wonder, like, what was a pivotal point for that convenience store to say yes? Is it what you just mentioned, like, hey, we can go in, we can remove all people from the store?
Because
this was small convenience stores. It's not like Walmart or anything.
Yeah.
We can remove all and people can age verification themselves inside. Or what do you think the pivotal business case for that?
So that's a very interesting point that you're raising here. I think sometimes when I think, I mean, and this is also back to the bank ID question you asked about, right? Sometimes I feel that one reason why it's hard sell is because the systems over here are already advanced enough. You know, for example, most of the access gates have keys that are issued separately already today.
Yeah.
So, for example, if somebody actually want to get in, it's automated. So you know, the moment you and show yourself, there's a sensor, light sensing system that actually senses it, and you are into it. So people haven't really probably identified it as a major problem. For example, like queuing is not really considered a major problem.
No.
You know. So those are the kind of issues in this part of the land. Of course, being a country that is relatively small in size, And of course, especially in Sweden, if you're talking about system logit, I mean, there are system logit every 1 kilometer in Stockholm, for example.
Mm.
So you hardly, sometimes on a Friday, you do see a long queue, but it's very seldom that you see people queuing up for a long time, and alcohol, the system logit is really seeing this as a genuine issue.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
I don't think the system blogger ever will have any issues because they are,
monopoly. Yeah, exactly. I think that's another, of course, that's always the case. But yeah. Still, you know, even if you look at pubs and all, right, I'm not really sure if they really see it as a real issue or a real problem. And I think for companies like us, you know, we have started to be like an intermediation layer. Like, you know, we haven't really gone ahead and implemented an application yet. And that's largely because, you know, we were getting enough traction in that area, and then there was also a lot of regulatory changes that actually favored our model. So in a way, the way we are positioning ourselves is like a Stripe or a Klarna, for example. Yeah. We don't want to be the end application, you know.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. The question is then, are there not enough customers out there who understand? Like, okay, you have a lot of normal identity intermediaries.
Mm-hmm.
So don't you guys need any use cases to prove and tell them you should come with us and use us as the intermediary because it might be more efficient?
Or like... Absolutely. I mean, see, the thing is like I can talk on our company per se.
Yeah.
So from our company per se, the biggest challenge has been that, I mean, we are still small. So if you want to really look into a new area and scale it up, it is a different kind of undertaking. So what we have done is really, we found certain niches in healthcare and public sector, and we decided to focus on that and get it working, because we were fortunate enough, of course, to be, helped, supported and helped by public sector and some of the healthcare entities over here in the Nordics. And so we thought the better approach is actually to make these kind of things robust and make it actually work cool from an end user experience point of view, et cetera. And once you do that, scaling it up to a particular application is not a big deal. So if somebody actually really have recognized SSI as like a great mechanism of really being able to do that in a scalable way, it doesn't take a lot of time for us to really support that kind of use case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the strategic choice we made like 2 years ago, and we are sticking to it even today.
Yeah. Well, you guys have to make the wallet, right? You have to be the holder that brings along the data.
Correct. And we also is the issuer, and we also provide agents or wallets for every issuer and verifiers.
Mm.
And we have also created mechanism for anybody to deploy these kind of agents in any infrastructure they want. From a single console. So that's what our business is all about.
Yeah. That's really cool. So we haven't been talking very high level about use cases and business. I want to dig a little bit into tech, but I want to take it from the EU perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned that you guys are part of the consortia, or not the, but there's a couple of consortias, but you guys have been part of a big one. And why don't you kind of tell me a little bit about that and how you guys have made a plan for time frame and what kind of technology you guys might be looking at?
Yeah, so we are part of a consortia that is led by Swedish and Finnish governments, and it's pretty much like almost 60 participating entities in total, located pretty much in all over Europe. The project's starting in May, April. End of April, and is going to run a little over 18 months project. And the beauty of the whole thing is that it's focusing on two or three very large scale pilots that will actually be rolled out and tried and tested on real life use cases, such as, for example, travel and payments, for example, and so on. So this is very exciting to see that there's a good push and a pull coming from different parts of Europe, and there's also like an effort and funding that is available way companies such as ours can actually really use the opportunity to really showcase what we have already done today and what is also, you know, what we are able to do with this kind of stack. The stack we have chosen today is largely the base stack is on Aries and Indie framework.
Yeah.
Having said that, there are also projects within Sweden that is really also looking at EBSI as another track. So what the approach we have done, taken as a company, that is iGranitario approach, is that we support multiple trust anchors. So all these different, say, indie-based ledgers or EBSI, et cetera, are trust anchors for us. And what we are providing is like a management system for companies to onboard, companies to issue, company to verify. And we create an environment for wallets to be deployed supporting these multiple protocols.
Yeah. So, well, this consortia, is it that there's other people, other companies coming in, coming with different types of technologies? Will there mm-hmm. be a focus on interoperability, or will there be a crash when it comes to meeting in this consortia and kind of figure out what to do?
I think one slight advantage we have when it comes to EWC is that there's a slight consensus within the entities to look at Indy as like the base and then formulate an architecture from an interoperability point of view, formulate an architecture. So every as long as every company actually is adhering to that architecture and data schemas and standards that are laid out in the interoperability work package, they should be able to say demonstrate, even though they're not really exactly using the same tech stack.
Yeah.
And now back to your point about, you know, whether this is going to crash. I don't necessarily believe that is going to be the case. At the same time, you know, coming from a telecom space, so if you look at how telecom systems have developed over a period of time, if you're familiar with, for example, if you've been, you know, alive during the 2G times or to early 3G times, etc.
Yeah.
If you travel, for example, from Europe to US, your phone doesn't work, basically.
I remember.
Yeah. In fact, in the early days, you even have to change your phone to a local phone or you need to take the SIM card and so on.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of different dramas that was played out. And it was all down to, you know, your definition of crashing, the interoperability coming to a halt, you know.
Yeah.
I would say the telecom architecture is like the first decentralized architecture that actually made interoperability possible to a global scale. So coming from that domain space and seeing how things have actually advanced in the data space or the internet company space or the over the top provider space, I think like I would say 5 years down the line, it shouldn't really matter.
Mm.
And there'll be like there are clear incentives for companies to actually make sure that they actually support multiple protocols.
Yeah. Do we need more research pilot projects on interoperability, or what's your point on that?
Again, I feel that I think the focus should be more on real life use cases.
Yeah.
Companies or entities adopting it. For example, can we have all universities across Europe, deciding that we will issue digital credentials as graduation certificates, for example, or school certificates, for example, or skill certificates, for example, or health certificates, for example. Now, we already tried to canvas when the COVID was coming in. We tried to canvas the Swedish entities to, you know, adopt SSI as one of the mechanisms of issuing vaccination certificates. We failed. And in fact, the standards or the specs already supported it. But people actually, so there's a bit of hesitation to new things.
Yeah.
A bit of hesitation to, not to take a risk, especially if you're like a public sector player. Understandably, the incentive to take risk is much lower. So I can empathize with those decision making process. At the same time, I think it's about time that we are looking at really adopting these things and take that risk of failure.
Yeah. This EU project, you guys said it was 18 months, right?
Yeah.
How does the world look after 18 months?
Well, my hope is that there's a greater recognition of the standards and the technology stack out there. For me, 18 months is a good enough period for us to also try a large scale system between countries, because, you know, as I was talking in the very, very beginning, even between Finland and Sweden, we can't exchange data that is completely verifiable. So those kind of things are, the awareness building is the starting point for any decision making. So I think 18 months from now, I think that awareness within the governments and the knowledge within the key decision-making entities would result in a better possibility emerging, and that's what my hope is in 18 months down the line.
Yeah, your hope. What's your percentage of that happening?
I think it's very clear to me that the kind of scale and this kind of opportunity out there, if we actually enable a completely verifiable ecosystem of data transfer, the kind of opportunity that will actually open up for me is like huge. And it is inevitable that it's coming. It's just that, you know, sometimes people haven't even thought about the problem really as a problem.
No.
You know? So, for example, I mean, today, you know, when you go abroad, you're carrying your passport, you're carrying your COVID certificate, you're carrying your boarding pass and everything, right? And you're actually showing your passport to a man or a woman in the check-in counter, and they are spending time trying to even look at it and read through it and so on, right? It's a complete stupidity.
Yeah.
I had a recent example where we were in Abu Dhabi, and we were in a queue in this hotel for almost half an hour because there was like a couple of receptionists, and they were checking every single passport, every single COVID certificate, every single. And then I finally had to ask, like, you know, what are you really checking?
Yeah?
So the problem actually is that the world actually hasn't realized the stupidity that people are actually into. So it's people like us who actually need to step up and say that nobody ever in the world should do a job that way. You need to check and verify and sign off yourself.
No.
You should not be accountable for something that you cannot do.
It's that identity guard mechanism, human identity guard mechanism. I don't understand it, because in reality, it's like just this poor guy potentially making the wrong choice, and mm-hmm. they shouldn't be liable to do that. They should not, with the technology we have today, they should not be liable to have to do that.
Right. And another aspect is also that, you know, why one another reason is also that, apart from like a handful of companies, right, the big techs have been, in my mind, have been rather okay. I mean, this might be a bit controversial if in front of my privacy friends, etc. But they've been rather okay when it comes to ensuring that it's not really completely they've been reasonably okay in the way they've handled the data, in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, at least given the state where we are in, you know, of course it could be much better, much improvable, and there's like potential concerns and blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we have not really seen a massive, complete breakdown of the system, apart from a handful of cases around Facebook, for example.
You know? Yeah.
So in a way, I would say 80% of the big techs or tech companies and all who have actually been, collecting massive amount of data has been reasonably well-governed.
Yeah.
So that's also another reason why. So the self-governance, yes, we know that self-governance is hasn't happened, but it has not been so bad that people actually felt threatened yet.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. So, but at the same time, people are gaining understanding that, okay, that threat is real, going to be real. And we have seen that in some of the examples. So in my mind, transparency, auditability, respecting individual privacy, etc., is getting traction.
Yeah.
So 5 years down the line, if I may put it that way, protecting the digital rights, transparency, auditability would be fundamental. And for me, I think one of the aspects that I think will be fundamental is that any company that actually is exposing consuming data, they want to do it without having to worry about the complications of legality or complications of violating the digital rights or privacy, for example. So today, for example, if you look at, like, you know, when I when I'm running a e-commerce shop, I safely integrate a Klarna or I safely integrate a Stripe. I don't have to really worry about whether are they is there really am I going to get payment? Am I going to you know, am I going to be liable if there's any fraud and so on? I don't have to worry about that, right?
No.
That's also one reason why those kind of systems are actually successful. So I think that kind of movement actually is beginning to emerge in my mind, even in the data space.
Absolutely. No, I look forward to the day we have a gray login button or gray identify button or gray verify button, and it's just like I can choose whatever I want to get there, and the person creating the system can choose whatever extra tool he wants to support himself on. So they can choose a Klarna, they can choose something for identification, and just it gives them a gray button, and then we're off to a good start.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So I'm gonna end with a couple of minor questions, just like tech, because I like to kind of hear where you're at. You guys said you were in the Aries stack. But what's your favorite protocol for exchange? Do you have like DIDCOM, VCHAP, OIDC, anyone I might have forgotten? Is there any there you feel that's...
Yeah, that's pretty much the stack we have. We have DIDCOM with Aries framework. We also support OIDC on top of it in addition to the connection protocol.
Yeah.
And for me that they've done a quite good job. And I said in the very beginning, I mean, we do support multiple other protocols as well.
Yeah.
Around EBSI, etc. And there are a bunch of other things. But I do think that one reason why I would really recommend say an AIP 1.0 with DITCOM, et cetera, is like it promotes it. There are a lot of things. It's a maturity that way it promotes privacy by design, features like data minimization. It actually enables ZKP, for example, and so on.
Yeah.
And then last but not the least, it's like the privacy is inbuilt in the protocol itself, you know? And then what we have done on top of it is really to extend these protocols with compliance by design. The point I was trying to make earlier, like, you know, when somebody actually onboard to iGrant and gain access to data, we guarantee that the data actually is authentic. We guarantee that the risk associated is very minimal and so on. So that's what I would say the reasons why I would go for that.
Yeah, sounds good. And I have this question, like, if you choose a credential container, and you asked me what you mean about it, and there has been this, I wouldn't call it war, but there is a branding war happening where you have verifiable credentials, and then you have MDL, which is pushed by Apple states in the government in the US.
Yeah.
Then you have the ACDC, which is more like niche. And you probably have some more. You have JWTs in general, just like straight up JWTs, but they're not the same. They're data containers, but not necessarily credentials. So what would you give your support to?
I think being from the Europe and being closely working a lot with verifiable credentials, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be supporting that. And having said that, I'm more of a, I want to be an enabler. Yeah. I don't want to be stuck with technology.
Yeah.
Even though I have a technology hat, I still believe that what we really want is a world that which functions well and where people actually benefits from the whole thing and people actually can do things in an ethical and legal manner.
Yeah.
And from that point, I think verifiable credentials would be my choice.
Thank you for showing up. I hope you had a good conversation. I got a lot of good insight and information from you, which is really great.
It was my pleasure, and thank you so much, Snorri.
Thank you. So I hope to see you again at some events.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the DIN podcast. Keep on following us to find more great content. visit DIN Foundation to subscribe and get in touch with us if you want to join in for a conversation. Have a great day.